Welcome into an episode of Light the Lamp here on DuckStream. I'm your host, Alexis Downey, and we are excited to welcome in our guest today, a host on Sportsnet, as well as Hockey Night in Canada, and the co-host on 32 Thoughts, the podcast, Kyle Bukauskas. Kyle, thank you for joining us back, and thank you for repping a Ducks jersey.
Yes, Alexis, it's great to see you again. Great to be on again. I got to make it clear. I don't cheer for teams here from this position, but this is more just a nod to my childhood. So we'll stand up here a little bit. Got the old school Wild Wings third that didn't last a long time, but the nostalgia is too good. Number nine, back when Paul Kariya was just wearing an A at the time. He wasn't the C back then. Anyway, it is a prized possession now. Don't put it on very often. But if there was ever a time, I thought it was today. So good to be on with you.
A special occasion. And I have to tell you, when we last did our episode a couple years ago in the Paul Kariya studio, we're still here in the Paul Kariya studio. That's still his locker behind me. Things haven't really changed as much around here.
No, which is great to see. Really great to see. The background looks awesome. I'm drawn to the poster there with the old, the like, Geehee Bearer style mask. I see the Kariya stick there and behind over your shoulder. All great things.
Yeah. I even actually brought you because I know that last time we talked about that Paul Kariya bobblehead that we ended up sending you. Well, this time, hey, Leo Carlson, who is someone we're going to be talking about. So I had to show you this time.
Well done. That's outstanding. From like the hair on down, that is a good bobblehead.
It looks like him.
Sometimes, yes, right? And every now and then, you see a bobblehead that you're like, okay, they had good intentions. Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't quite. They nailed that one. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And all the orange, and Ducks fans are, they're loving that bobblehead. So, well, Kyle, let's get into it. I mean, first off, how was your off season? You became a dad. You know, what was it like, spending some time away from hockey before we got into the season?
Yeah, different from all the other ones because, in previous summers, it is nice to take a 6-8 week kind of block just to completely shut your mind off from hockey and work and all that. And just to be able to relax and enjoy and maybe do a bit of traveling, go see family and that. But there wasn't much time to relax this summer, Alexis, let me tell you. So it was, it was a really special experience going through, of course, birth of your first child and everything went smoothly there, which we were so grateful for. And then we'd lived in Ottawa for the last number of years. Like that's where I was living when the last time we spoke and moved out to Calgary in July just to be closer to family now entering this new stage of our lives. So packing up the house, my parents came out to help us get all of that sorted and taken care of. And then we drove, we took my vehicle and that was my wife and I and our son in that one. And then my parents and our dog were in my wife's vehicle. And we spent 5 days with the drive across Canada, which was, a bit of a grind at times, but like just a real special period of our lives, knowing that we were going to end up out here and just the new chapter that we were all excited about. So, a lot of time trying to get settled, make everything feel like home again. As you can see behind me, like some rooms we haven't quite got to yet in terms of making feel homely. But we're chipping away here one day at a time.
That's so wonderful. Yeah, I can imagine that drive took a bit of time going all the way across like that.
Yes. Yeah. And we didn't want to push it because, of course, with a newborn, like he was 2.5 weeks old at that time. Wow. So you're not really sure. OK, are you going to have to stop? You knew you would have to every couple hours to feed him, change him and all that stuff. But it ended up working out like he was good. He slept a lot of it. So it was about every 2.5-3 hours we kind of blocked out a small town or a rest stop to pull off and just to take a few minutes to do what we had to do, which was perfect because for me, I'm ready to pull off and stretch my legs anyways. So we didn't try to do too big of chunks driving wise each day. It was about, 7.5-8 hours and took our time, did it over 4 nights, 5 days. And saw amazingly, we were at a gas station and I forget the name, it was a very small town in like remote kind of Northern Ontario, off the Trans-Canada. And, my dad struck up a conversation. He noticed there was a guy that was on like a motorcycle, like a touring bike by himself, but he had some very unique license plates. So he asked, he got me curious, where are the license plates from? Where are you from? So he says that it's kind of like broken English. He had his phone out to kind of help translate, but he was telling us that he was from South Kariya and he had flown to Argentina. And I think it was February the 7th, he began a bike tour from Argentina all the way up through, you know, through the Central Americas, through the United States. And now here he was in like remote Northern Ontario, eventually, you know, ending up in Alaska. That was the journey that he was on by himself.
Wow.
So anyway, that's it was really, really fascinating to see. And you're like, holy smokes, you're trying to think about how long it had been. Cause if he started in February, now we're mid July when we're chatting with this guy and he still had a lot of driving yet to do. So anyway, like we thought we had a long drive ahead of us, but it was nothing compared to what he had already had done. It did. Yeah, it does. So anyway, it's just some neat things to see along the way.
Yeah, that's amazing. And the fact that, you know, with the equator, so it was still summer. So he didn't have any of that bad weather traveling across. I mean, that.
Right. And that could have been part of how he planned it out. Yeah. Like, as I said, we didn't have enough time. And just again, through the broken English of it all to really break down, okay, where were your stops and how did you map it all out? But I don't even know where you begin. If that's the distance you're planning on traveling, how you go and map it out. But anyway, he still seemed to be in good spirits. Seemed like he was enjoying it.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of travel, now you have a little bit of travel too with your move. We were chatting about it beforehand. With your schedule, I mean, what are things looking like these days with the season underway now?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's similar, Alexis, in that, you know, obviously on Saturdays on Hockey Night in Canada, like that's our big night of the week. And so still primarily, you know, wherever the Leafs are on Saturday, that's where I am. Just a bit of a longer flight now coming from Calgary as opposed to from Ottawa, with the majority of their games either at home or somewhere in the east on Saturday nights. So getting out there, leaving on Friday, coming home Sunday, and then, you know, yeah, now into my second season doing the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot. And we record Sundays and Thursdays, so that's worked into it too. And then you know, there's always something that's going to pop up along the way that either you have to travel for or just you know, an extra little bit of work. And then there's the natural prep and trying to stay on top of everything the other days of the week over the course of the season. So it keeps things pretty full on top of, you know, trying to be present here when you're home with a 4 month old in your house now and trying to get to know him as well. Mm-hmm. But it's all been really good. Yeah, I think I just got to prioritize sleeping well when I can, again, knowing that, the flights and the time in the air is a little bit longer than it, used to be, and trying to take advantage of, you know, gaining 2 hours coming back home on Sunday to still get a bit of time with the family, that day. But it's been good so far. The thing is with, I'm sure, of course, down in your way there, and I'm not sure where your allegiance lies, if any, Alexis, when it comes to, baseball. Like, I'm still coming to terms with what happened in the World Series between the Jays and the Dodgers, but that it was unbelievable how that completely took over everything up here in Canada. You think about how big of a deal hockey is in this country. You know, 10.9 million people. That was the average audience for Game 7 of the World Series in a country. I think we're just over 40 million here now. I mean, you know, compare that to what you would, you know, consider percentage wise per capita in the States. I mean, you were talking Super Bowl numbers, if not even a little bit higher than that. Everyone was so swept up in it. And you know, it was the Maple Leafs on Saturdays were an afterthought for 2 weeks there down the stretch. So it was as great as that was, as heartbreaking as it was at the end. It's nice to kind of shift your focus back to hockey again.
I have to tell you, I was rooting for the Jays in the World Series just because you know, I'm not a Dodgers fan. I, you know, I didn't grow up here, but it's a good story, and I wanted to see them, you know, win it. So that was heartbreaking, but I mean, the series was incredible.
I know it was, and it's like as time goes on, I'm becoming more and more able to say that. The first week afterwards, I'm like, I don't care how exciting it was, like how it ended is like where my mind is at. But we were in Philadelphia. The Leafs were there on the weekend of games 6 and 7, and I brought my Jays hat with me And I was walking around town a little bit on the Friday, and I was taken aback by how many people were like, "Hey, good luck. Like, we're pulling for you guys." Aww. Think about how ruthless Philly sports fans can be.
Yeah.
Understandably, I can't see them rooting for the Dodgers knowing their history, but mm-hmm. you know, it was also the Jays that beat the Phillies back in 93 in the World Series. I suppose that's a long, long time ago now. But it was just, it was a little bit jarring where I'm like, holy smokes, we're getting support from Philly fans here. This is kind of neat. Anyway, of course, not enough in the end, but what a ride.
Yeah, really exciting time in sports. And with hockey already almost, what is it, almost a month into the season now. You know, you touched on it. This is your second season as the co-host on 32 Thoughts. What is it like, you know, coming into this year, working with Freech? What has that been? What would you learn from your first season and now you're taking into year two?
Well, he's still trying to figure out how to do it the proper way, I guess, or like the best way. Like, when I went into it, I really had not any experience in long form kind of sports talk, be it on radio or podcasting. You know, you're asked to be the guest every once in a while on a show here and there. But to actually take the reins of it and to help navigate. Yeah, that was an entire learning experience. And it'd be like anyone, you know, not just in our business, but anyone, you know, pursuing something new in their career, doing it, you know, the first 2 weeks versus, you know, a year later into it, how much more comfortable and confident you are in your own abilities. Like, that's all just natural. So I was navigating that early on. As I say, like, still trying to find the right rhythm and recipe to try to stay on top of everything around the league, at least to the point where you feel comfortable and have a sense, because as much as you try to consume it all every night, you can only watch so much. Mm-hmm. I will say, living now in the Mountain Time Zone, I'm getting a much better perspective and able to spend more time watching, whether it's the Ducks or other teams that typically play later versus in the East. Because as much as you never tried to ignore what was going on, as you know, like, it's tough when games are constantly starting at 10 o'clock local or 10:30, you know, sleep does become a priority at some point. But having the extra 2 hours does help there. So, it's been really rewarding. It's been really challenging. And that's what I like the most about it. You know, mm-hmm. I think, as again, whether it's in our line of work, or I'm sure anyone else listening to this that has, you know, another career in a different industry, oftentimes I find, you can kind of get into that trap that you notice. Certainly for me at times, there's like that good job syndrome, mm-hmm. you know, where it's like, we go to do, say for us working a broadcast, and it's like, well, so, you know, we got on the air, we got the game in, nothing catastrophic happened. So, you know, like, good job, everyone. We'll see you all next week. But I really like that there's how Elliot works. Like, he drives a very high standard, and also the listeners too. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a certain expectation that, you know, if you have a Blue Jackets fan listening, if you're going to talk about Columbus, like, you best be in the know and up to date with what's been going on there, or talking about the Ducks. Like, and if there's any Ducks fans that are kind enough to listen to our show, like, they'll let you know if you misspoke about, you know, what's been going on, kind of thing. So it pushes you to be on top of it. Which I really enjoy. And so there's times where we get kind of close to achieving that. There's times where we don't come anywhere close to achieving that. But it's certainly, that's always the goal where you try to get to. And just to get a chance to work with Elliot in a closer to capacity, and, you know, Dom, our producer as well, has been really cool. Like, I've known Elliot for a number of years now. We've worked, been on the same team for a long time, traveled together for big events, the Stanley Cup final, had a lot of fun on the road together. But it's naturally a different set of circumstances now when you're actually working in this close capacity multiple mm-hmm. times a week. So just have a bit better understanding of what makes him tick, how he operates. There are some wonky hours doing this podcast, Alexis, I have to tell you. But I think, again, it's what separates it. Yeah. Like, the goal for us, again, when we record on Sundays or Thursdays, you know, for those that like to wake up in the morning and listen to our show, whether it's on their commute to work or they're out for a walk first thing in the morning, like, the goal is always for us to that be as up to date as humanly possible in terms of what's happened around the league, what's been discussed around the league in terms of what could be coming trades wise, signing, who's in trouble, all those sorts of things. So it's very demanding in that sense. But as I alluded to earlier, like it can be very rewarding. So I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Do you guys get to record together in person very often?
It's rare. It's okay. Honestly rare, Alexis, because even at times where, you know, for example, next month we'll go out and cover the Board of Governors meetings. They're happening in Colorado Springs this year, over a couple of days in December. And so we'll both be there. We'll both travel in on Sunday. We'll have to record a pod that day. But just the way, you know, our audio systems are set up. So like my microphone here, it goes right into my laptop, ditto for him on his end. Well, as you know, Alexis, like if we're both sitting in the same room with those setups, now you've got reverb of both of our voices going into one microphone and the other one. And so it's making Dom, our producer, go crazy back home in Vancouver. So there's been times where, like, I remember the GM meetings last year, we're at the same city, we're in the same hotel, but we're in our separate rooms doing the episode just technically because of how it has to be. So there are a few circumstances where we do get together, especially if, you know, we get a chance to spend some time interviewing somebody in person. Mm-hmm. That's always a bonus. But oftentimes it's even when we are together, we're a little bit apart, which is probably for the better. Let's be honest. I'm not overly complaining about that. I'm sure Freed is not either. I better make that clear.
Well, you guys have gotten to spend some time away from the podcast. I saw ice cream is something that you guys share a mutual love for. Yeah. So I mean, I love ice cream too. Who doesn't love ice cream? So it's good that you guys get to do some things away from the podcast as well.
Yes. Like, thankfully we've got some interest in the same thing. Ice cream being one, good ice cream. Like we love going to things. Like we went to we were down in Florida last year, went to a spring training baseball game, little things like that. Like it's not difficult to find something if we're on the road together of like, hey, let's go, even if it's something simple as dinner. We are our own worst enemies in that sense where that neither one of us is going to go, you know what, we don't need ice cream tonight. Like we can always talk each other into going, which I do appreciate.
Favorite flavor?
Oh, you know,
so I'm putting you on the spot.
No. I honestly, I do love a good quality vanilla soft serve. Okay. And as somebody told me years ago, it makes sense because it matches your personality. And I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that. But if I'm going away from that, like mint chocolate chip is what I enjoy. And the ones with like the mint ice cream and the chocolate chips within it. That's what I love. But I'm a sucker for soft serve. Like if you can go somewhere where you can get it in a cup and they've got the ability to fire toppings on there, I'll go nuts like an 8-year-old. And I'm totally okay with that.
I have to tell you, mint chocolate chip is probably my favorite too.
So, is it really?
Yeah, it is. It is.
I was going to ask. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So
and you have like your go-to spots down in SoCal where you like to go?
I do. Yeah, I do. Handles Ice Cream. So if you're ever down here in Orange County for a Ducks game, got to go to Handles. It's actually, it started in my hometown back in Youngstown, Ohio, and it's franchised and they happen to have one here.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So you're from Ohio originally.
Yes. Yep.
So someone wrote into us, a few people did, about Graters.
Yeah.
I think originated in Cincinnati.
Yep.
Anyway, apparently we were told, and there's a location in Columbus. We were like, next time you're working a Blue Jackets game, you have to go to Graters.
Yep.
I haven't been before, but it was highly, highly recommended.
It's been years for me, but I would recommend it for sure.
Okay. All right. So if you're giving it the green light, now I know it's worth checking out. Okay.
And Handles, when you come here for a game at some point, we'll add that one to the list. But all right, enough about the ice cream. We should get to the ice hockey now, I suppose.
I guess so. Yes, that's a good point.
Specifically the Ducks, because today on the 32 Thoughts podcast, you guys started out by talking about Leo Carlson, fitting that we have his bobblehead here. But I mean, he's been red hot for this Ducks team this season. And I'm curious what stands out the most to you about his play.
Well, I think just the assertiveness that he's playing with, and it's even, he's a driver of it, but whether it's a McTavish or a Cutter Gauthier, and even like a Beckett Seneca, which I didn't see coming this early, it's been really remarkable to like, how much fun they seem to be having playing the game and how much of a handful that they are. Like when they get rolling around in the offensive zone, and as you know, like they've come across some pretty good teams here along the way already this season, and haven't had any troubles scoring. Mm-hmm. And you saw glimpses, of course, over the last couple of years, and obviously the development model that Pat Verbeek and everybody has put in place there. It kind of started where it seemed like they had a bajillion defensemen as like great potential, and now you're starting to see that all actualized. And then a guy like Mason McTavish shows up, and you're like, all right, you can see one day like there's going to be a heck of a player there. And then it just kept coming. You get the opportunity to acquire a player like Gauthier, as you say, Leo Carlson now in the mix, and Seneca, and you go on down the list from there. Like it's been really spectacular. But for Carlson, like just his ability to use his size. So I know like in Montreal, they take Slafkovský first overall a few years ago. And there are a number of his teammates that said over the last couple of years, he's still such a young player, but they kept saying, eventually, and now you're starting to see he's understanding A, like how big he really is, mm-hmm. and B, how to use that to his advantage at the NHL level. It seems like you're starting to see a little bit of that more with Carlson. Like it's all natural right now, like third year in the league, you're more confident. You've been through it now 2 years in a row. Like there's a lot of developmental leaps and jumps that you take that's natural for a player at that stage, and certainly the one that has as high ability as he does, just the way he protects the puck, and again, like it's not like I heard Brad Marchand talk about Celebrini mm-hmm. the other day, and he was saying like he's not a guy that's just waiting around for the power play to jump all over it, and I would say Carlson's that type of player too, right? Like a guy that seemingly you're able to trust in some pretty big spots too, and I just look at after I think it was the second goal he scored last night against Winnipeg, and just the celebration, I just thought like it's a brash young kid, like I mean that with the most compliment, that just seems to be operating at such a high mm-hmm. level right now. And as we talked about on the podcast this morning, Alexis, it was a few weeks back when Elliot was banging the table saying, Utah, pay the man, when it came to Logan Cooley. Yeah. That contract got done a little bit later. And I'm like, I think we're at the same point here with Leo Carlson and Anaheim. And I know Verbeek likes to do things on his timeline, totally respect that, but man, pay the guy. He's next. He's been great.
Between him and Cutter Gauthier, also someone that yes. We're going to have to look at the contract and what that's going to look like by the end of the year. I mean, Cutter's been scoring a lot of goals early in the season, as we know.
Absolutely. And it's all like good problems to have, right? Like I know ultimately you've all got to make it work. There is a salary cap structure that you have to operate within. But I think the fact that they're able to get a bit of business done, whether it was McTavish or a Jackson Lacombe here early on, I think it goes a long way to help kind of establishing a bit of a precedent and seeing, some of that group already start to commit and how that all looks in terms of, term and dollar amount. And I know every person's situation's different. The old line of like, that's that person's business and this is ours here. But I think you're at least on your way to establishing a situation in Anaheim where you've got a lot of good young talent locked up for a long time. Like I was in Ottawa when they started to go through that, where Tkachuk gets his new deal, and then Stützle, and then I know Josh Norris isn't there anymore, but like he went through it, Jake Sanderson, etc. And now you're seeing, of course, unfortunately, Tkachuk's hurt right now. We're seeing that group now mm-hmm. entering the next phase and really starting entering some of the prime years of their careers. And they had a big weekend picking up a couple of points, finally got into the playoffs last year, and kind of a similar phase that Anaheim is just starting to enter. Mm-hmm. And as I say, whether it's Carlson or Gauthier and go on down the list, Zellweger too, like all the guys that are going to be due up here soon. But as I say, you'd rather have that and have those players already in-house versus trying to go bring them in from elsewhere.
Right. And you mentioned the young defensemen, all of them in this organization, so many of them. And you talk about Olin Zellweger, Pavel Mintikov. Now Ducks mm-hmm. even have yeah. Ian Moore. I mean, all these different names, and it seems like they're starting to figure out, their roles on that end. And, they have been without Radko Gudas recently. So seeing a guy like Jacob Trouba step up, it's seemed to frustrate some of the Rangers fans per se, seeing all the success that their former Rangers have had out here. But,
I wonder why.
Seeing that yeah. for, I mean, from this perspective, what have you thought about that?
Well, I was thinking about it the other day, Alexis. Like, it was kind of right around this time last year when I know Elliot first reported about how, when the time both Trouba and Kreider were with the Rangers, and how kind of the memo had went out across the league from Chris Drury and company saying that those two were available. And of course, you know, the firestorm that comes from that, Trouba eventually gets dealt in December. And that was, you know, kind of the start of eventually what now the two guys are in Anaheim. I've long been a fan of Chris Kreider. I know he's had some, you know, injury issues in the past, but I just always admired the way that he played the game. Has the ability to shoot and score, but just the touch around the net. I remember asking him one time about just how he's gone about, I don't know, about perfecting, because you're always working on it, but become a real elite tipper on top of the crease, in and around the net. And he says, like, he would study his defensemen, like, okay, which guys are more inclined to shoot it low, which ones shoot it up high, little things like that. And kind of knowing, okay, whether it was Trouba or Braden Schneider or an Adam Fox in New York, you know, he knew more often than not, you know, once the puck was on their stick, kind of where to have himself positioned because of where the shot was likely going to come, which, like, blew my mind. Cause I'm going, who thinks of that? Right. Yeah. Usually it's just get to the front of the net and hopefully rely on, you know, an adapted hand-eye coordination to make something happen. So that stuff always really fascinates me. And, you know, you're seeing it now in Anaheim, and, you know, you mentioned how, like, beyond even Jackson Lacombe, and you say, like, the number of young defensemen that are continuing to grow there. And that was the big question going in, where a lot of young talent, and, you know, you looked at their forward depth on paper and you thought, yeah, this is, could be a team potentially that won't have too much issues scoring. But how do they defend, knowing how young the group is in totality, doing that over the course of a year? It can be very, very demanding, and we still got a long way to go. As you say, like, we're kind of just entering the quarter pole here now. But boy, as we were talking a little bit off camera before we started here, the West seems like there's not a lot of places to hide here early on. Like, there are some legit heavyweights emerging in the early going. And so even more impressive that through all of that, you know, Anaheim stands atop the Pacific Division. They were kind of the one team I looked at that said they got the potential to pop and maybe surprise a little bit, but this is even beyond what I think most of us could have anticipated. The challenge, of course, is trying to at least be somewhere near that level where it's sustainable over the course of 82 games. And it starts, of course, on the blue line. It helps to have great goaltending to help mask some issues. And they certainly do have that. Like, it was great even for Mrazek as the backup. They go into Vegas on Saturday and, you know, it gets a little rocky there in the third period with the lead slipping away, but still walked away with the 2 points. But going back to, as you say, Trouba and Kreider, I even just look at, you know, that post-game interview with Ali Lozov and Trouba in Vegas after he scored, and Kreider walks by there at some point. And that's kind of where my thinking was of, you know, where we all were a year ago and how much, you know, things can change, where, you know, even if a situation seems, you know, untenable and the need for something new, doesn't mean you can't find somewhere else that success is still able to achieve. Right. So, it seems like they've got a good thing going with those two guys, you know, in and amongst a whole bunch of young players there. Just seems like a really, really fun blend right now.
And you talk about how much things can change in a year. You look at the coaching staff as well. Head coach Joel Quenneville coming in, changing things. Are you surprised by how much he has changed this team?
You know, I guess I have to say yes, because as I said, like, I as much as you could envision, all right, some steps taken forward here. And it really started when Verbeek at the end of last year going, our goal is to be a playoff team here this season. But to be as far along as they seem to be a month into things, yeah, I am a little bit surprised. You know, obviously, Quenneville has the coaching resume, the Stanley Cups, been doing it for a long, long time. And obviously, you know, a few years away from the game. And so naturally you're wondering, it's one thing for him to reconnect again with some older players that were around still and were part of, you know, how teams were ran back then. But now you've got a whole new generation of players, and how is he going to relate to them? And even, was it a first couple of weeks of the year, or I saw there was just a little clip online of like Quenneville was mic'd up on the bench and he was chuckling about an exchange he had. Was it with Leo?
It was
I think
Leo.
That's what it was. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like, I'm going, Like there's a coach that, I mean, clearly has gone through, you know, a lot of great things, some tough things in more recent years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is in a position where it seems like he's doing the work to connect with, you know, all players on the roster here to this point, regardless of what their age is or how many games they played in the league. And that's really it. Like, I know, like Rod Brindamore is a guy I think the world of, and his big thing with coaching is like you're managing people, right? Like the X's and O's stuff, whatever. A lot of it is so similar across the league and how teams play. How can you get your players to buy into and believe what you're selling to get the most out of everyone? And he seems to have found that here early on.
Yeah. And that's something he has talked about with us, just knowing them as people off the ice too, that connection, mm-hmm. the players, you can see how much respect they have for not only him, Jay Woodcroft, Brian McGill, all the other coaches in the coaching staff, this fresh change this season. But you mentioned it, just how this Western Conference has looked so far this season. Are there any mm-hmm. other teams that maybe, whether they're a surprise or that you have your eye on out West right now?
Yeah, I mean, surprise and maybe a little more of a negative sense is Edmonton. I mean, I know they've kind of done the similar thing the last 2 years where they started, you know, really unspectacularly and managed to turn it around. And then they're in the Stanley Cup final next thing you know. Like Colorado, I'm not surprised of, but like, look out, you know what I mean? I know Vegas lost a couple games, missing some bodies, but I still think they're a legit heavyweight. I think Dallas is going to be more than fine. Mm-hmm. You know, you go down the list from there, like Winnipeg, I think is still a very good team. You know, maybe they don't win the President's Trophy this year, but I think they're going to be a real tough out. I know like Utah lost three in a row here now after a really great start. Like, let's see where things kind of go here. The first kind of real bout of adversity, I guess, if you call it, and in their season, I still think there's a lot to like there. But like going away, the biggest surprise I say is the Ducks for me. Like that's top of the list out West, right now in my mind. So it's been really great to see. And just, you know, every year you're always looking at the standings from the year previous going in and you're going, okay, who potentially could you see falling out? And oftentimes, you know, maybe it's one or two teams, but you can kind of talk yourself into saying, well, they're still going to be good. They're still going to be good. And more often than not, there's a little more change than that. It's just been refreshing to see, you know, some teams that maybe you didn't anticipate or haven't been anywhere close to this conversation for a while. Anaheim, of course, leading the way in that. I will say, like, even, you know, San Jose, like they're starting to now rack up some wins. Chicago's been really impressive. You know, that's where our crew will be this Saturday, where the Leafs will be in Chicago. So I'm really looking forward to see that group in person. Like they're digging in. Like, that's why I say, like, the West, of course, you've got your heavyweights, but then you've also got, you know, a whole list of teams too, that, are they going to be in the playoffs this year? Maybe not, but they are nowhere near the same type of, team vulnerable to take 2 points off than maybe they were in the past. So as I say, for the fact that Anaheim's rising, you know, to the top right now through all of that, you know, kudos to them and how they've approached, the early going here.
And how about, you know, the individual points leaders? When you look at the NHL right now, of course, you have McKinnon. I mean, all Western teams, McKinnon, you have Celebrini up there, you have Bedard, you have Carlson. Think about having all those young players at the top. I mean, what does it say about this next generation of young stars that we have in the league?
Yeah, I mean, I just more and more you're seeing players that arrive in the NHL. And though there are some growing pains, I mean, Celebrini, it's been pretty seamless, it feels, since he came in. I know, like, Bedard obviously had a tougher second year. And I have to admit, like, I was uncomfortable with the piling on last year with him, right? Like, because it was kind of, he was struggling. And at the same time, Celebrini was really taking off right away in San Jose. And it seemed like there was such a rush to be like, look, like, Celebrini's such a better player. Like, Bedard's not it. Like, I know he went first overall, but he's not going to be able to be successful at this level. I just thought, like, God, it's way, way too early. Yeah. Maybe 15 years from now, you look back and say, okay, yeah, Celebrini had a better career. Okay, like, we can talk about that then. But I just thought to take a stance and to throw your flag in the ground somewhere so early, it just really did make me uncomfortable because of how young all these players are. So I'm really happy for Bedard to see him, like, and then the whole group to have some better results here. I know he's got the most road assists, I think, so far this year, on top of being right near the top of the leaderboard points wise. But to me, that says that's not a guy that's feasting on favorable matchups at home, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's done a lot of damage away from the United Center. And that's a sign of a good player being able to play through having to go against the other team's best. So I think, you know, what does it say? Like, just young players are more prepared now than ever, right? Like, and we've seen glimpses of it. Of course, there's generational talents that come through and play that way. But now the fact that you've got, you know, a small handful of players that are still, you know, on their entry level deals, that have the ability to, now again, it's one thing to do it early on in the year. We'll see where things are at come March and April. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's a really exciting time to see. You know, you just every, what, 5-7 years, there is kind of a shift to, you know, I don't know if you want to call it a new era, but there is certainly a new wave of young players that come in. And, you know, there's a change at the top in terms of who you see in the mix for the Art Ross and the Rocco Richard and things like that. And that's what makes, you know, players like Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid, you know, so special and, you know, want to appreciate for as long as you can, because they've been able to withstand all the turnover in terms of how the game is played. And now, like, a new wave of players coming in terms of how they grew up, how they developed, all the tools and teaching that they had at their fingertips for all those crucial developmental years. And this is kind of just the byproduct of it now, where even though your birth certificate says, you know, you're barely legal to go into a sports bar down in the States, or maybe even not yet, you can be one of the best scorers in the National Hockey League.
And it's been fun to see the personalities too. It's felt like that's been a big shift with these young players. They're starting to showcase that more. Obviously helps when you don't have the dress code anymore. Players can wear what they want to wear when they come in too. And that showcases even more of the personality.
Yeah, like that. And then, you know, all the little things that we're seeing now, like teams are so into, you know, like their own content, right? Yeah. Which is great. Like the different behind the scenes things, you know, that just, it wasn't part of the organizational philosophy for the longest time. But certainly with understanding that that's where we're going and technology getting to the point where, you know, it's a pretty easy thing to do and to put out there. And, you know, fans are just craving for every little bit of it. And finally, you know, it took a bit of time, but I think the players are understanding their role in all of that, you know, and which is, that's, you know, you're not going to go anywhere on that front if you don't have the buy-in from the players themselves. So, you know, when you look at, you know, what the Amazon series has done the last couple of years, you know, I mean, it first kind of started with the HBO 24/7s. But now that's coming, you know, a little more commonplace, I think it's just this generation of players, like Alexis, I think we kind of, as we grew up, it became more commonplace. But I think for a lot of these players from day one, their lives have been in a lot of ways public. You know what I mean? With the ability to be on social media, the ability to be out there for anyone in the world to see if they so choose to. So it's not that much of an adjustment, I would think, now that you get into a point where, you know, you're playing in the National Hockey League and now you've got a camera crew saying, hey, we want to follow you to the rink today. We want to, you know, film you while you're doing your warm up. We want to talk to you while you're taping your stick and ask you, you know, why you're taping that way. They've kind of lived their whole lives that way, where cameras are just always around and there's the opportunity or potential for everybody to see a lot of what you do. So I think it just kind of comes natural to the young players now, because it's been a big part of their lives already, even if it's on a slightly smaller scale. You know, the idea behind it, I think, is all similar.
Yeah, that's a really good point. When you look at this generation, how they've grown up, we've been talking a lot about the West. We got to talk about the East too. Any team in particular kind of stands out to you, whether it has been a surprise or someone that you're watching?
Yeah, Montreal has been a joy to watch. Like, I would say they're the Ducks of the East in terms of like entertainment value, where if I'm sitting down on the couch at night and I see them on, it's like, I've got to find a way to be able to watch them, whether it's on the TV or on the iPad or something, because you just never know. You don't want to miss something spectacular, right? Like, they've got a lot of younger talent, and I'll call Cole Caulfield's been in the league a bit longer than Elio Carlson or Cutter Gauthier, but just whether it's him or an Ivan Demidov, the ability to just take you out of your seat and watch in amazement, and the team's winning, right? Like they're atop of their division the same way Anaheim is there. So success is following them on top of just being a fun brand to play. I figured they would be a lot of fun to watch this year. I wasn't sure in terms of the results wise, what that was going to translate to early on. But, you know, they're putting themselves in a really great spot as the Atlantic Division is kind of in a state of flux here. And I'm not too sure beyond them what to make of what we've seen through the first month here. But beyond that, like, I think not surprised that Carolina is off to a good start. Not surprised that the Devils are putting themselves in a good spot again this year, like with Jack Hughes being healthy, obviously that's a huge help when it comes to where they ultimately want to get to. And then I think it's just beyond that, there's kind of a bigger mushy middle, if you will.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a lot of separation. Like I believe as of this morning, the last wild card team and the team at the bottom of the standings, I think there's only 4 points separating them. And again, I understand we're talking on November the 10th. So it's natural that maybe there isn't the same separation or there will be in 3 or 4 months from now. But there just seems to be a lot of teams that are still kind of figuring out what they are. Like Toronto's in that conversation. The Rangers are kind of perplexing where they are dynamite on the road, but can't seem to figure it out at home.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of consternation there naturally about where they ultimately are going to be. So that's kind of where I look at the East right now, where, as I said, out West, ton of heavyweights, a lot of unsure kind of question marks in the East right now, you know, beyond the Carolinas and the Montreals and even a New Jersey.
And it is early to be, you know, looking at all of these teams. So understandable that we don't know the answers are what's going to happen, you know, with some of these teams.
Yeah, exactly. And so as long as you're picking up enough wins along the way to keep yourself in the conversation, like that's not always the worst thing, or doesn't necessarily mean like, oh boy, this team's in trouble. You know, like Toronto, for example, I'll say like they've been, I don't want to say notorious, but it's been, you look at the last 5 years, Alexis, like they've had kind of, they've had some so-so Octobers, they've had some bad Octobers, but then they've had dynamite Novembers for whatever reason. It's kind of been that ebb and flow out of the gate to start a season. But this year is kind of feeling different. So I think that's why there's a little more, what are they? What are they going to be about this year? Maybe compared to years past. Mm-hmm. And you could tell there's absolutely those questions going on internally. Like I was saying to some of our colleagues in our group chat last night, like how many more times are we going to see Berube snap at the bench? You know what I mean? Like how many times can they show that? Because it's just been, it's clearly been frustrating for the fans to watch and frustrating for the coaches too, because they're just not sure yet what to make of what they've been seeing. So there's that. That's been one example, and just a lot of still, okay, not sure yet what to make of this group. But as you say, because it's only early November, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Well, Kyle, as you look ahead in your schedule, do you have anything exciting coming up this season? Are the Olympics on the schedule for you?
Yeah, I'll be going to the Olympics this year, Alexis, for the first time. I've never had a chance to do that before. I grew up, so for me, you know, Salt Lake City in 2002, like that was my 72 Summit Series, or 1980 Lake Placid, or 87 Canada Cup. And just in terms of being at that age where seeing, you know, your country win an Olympic gold medal, a stage like that, and the fashion that they did and all the pressure going in, it just stuck with you forever. And you look back at that moment in time as such an incredible experience and memory. I've long thought about, wow, wouldn't it be great to cover an Olympics one day. So to be able to go over to Milan and to be there for covering the men's tournament, a little bit of the women as well, will be, you know, really special and just a huge honor that to be asked to be part of it. So I got that to prepare for and look forward to in February. And beyond that, I think Elliot and I and Dom are going to go down to Miami or South Florida, just at least for the lead up to the Winter Classic that will be down there, you know, where the Miami Marlins play. So I'm looking forward to that. The only problem is, I think, because the game itself is on a Friday, and of course Saturday is hockey night for us. So I'm not sure if we're going to be able to stick around for the game itself, but at least to kind of see, you know, the practice day the day before. And I think the idea at least is to spend some time and, you know, get some interviews done with some of the particulars involved while we're down there, and put that into a podcast episode to pump out to everybody. That I'm looking forward to. Board of Governors, you never know what you're going to see there. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Colorado Springs before, so I'm looking forward to just being in a new place. But beyond that, it's just it's the Saturday schedule, which is always a real treat to be part of. And as I say, looking forward to Chicago this weekend and some, you know, fun stops along the way throughout the season here. So yeah, lots to keep you interested.
Yeah, you'll certainly be busy through these next couple months. Can't wait to see the content from not only the Olympics, but also the Winter Classic. And Kyle, thank you so much for joining us here on DuckStream. So great to catch up with you. And like I said, looking forward to seeing all your content coming out.
Yes, you too, Alexis. Keep up the great work. Nice to be on with you again.
Thank you.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.